G'day. This is the Cloud Ace podcast, bringing you the latest in cloud security through captivating chats with fascinating cybersecurity experts who are leaving their mark on the industry. Cloud Ace is brought to you by the SANS Institute and hosted by SANS fellow Frank Kim. And now, prepare for departure. We're cleared for takeoff. Here's your captain, Frank Kim.
Hello and welcome to the SANS Cloud Ace podcast. I'm extremely excited to have with us here today, Brett Cumming, who is the head of security over at Skechers. Brett, thanks a lot for joining.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Frank. Look forward to it.
You know, we had a lot of fun last time we got together over dinner and drinks. And so, you know, based on what we talked about, I thought, you know, the audience would love to hear about your journey in technology, in security, in cybersecurity, and specifically it related to cloud in more recent times as well. So definitely look forward to jumping right in here. But, you know, to start, I'd like to start with, you know, all of the guests here. Can you share a little bit of your personal and family history, kind of, hey, maybe, you know, where you grew up and kind of maybe perhaps how that wound up getting you into technology to begin with?
Sure, I'd be happy to. So I was born and raised in Southern California. Actually, where I live and work now is within the same couple mile radius. I've kind of lived my whole life, which wasn't really my plan. You know, it's kind of just the way life went, which is similar to, you know, my career and technology journey as well. It wasn't something that was really planned out. So I have, being the local kid growing up here, I kind of got involved with computers and stuff early on in my life. It was the old computer in the garage that someone had discarded and was left to rot and rust that just caught my attention. And being the curious person I was, figured out how to put the pieces back together and get the thing working and load it up. You know, what must have been a very early version of Windows or DOS or something like that, which was my first exposure to computers. And then as I went through my life, it was more of a novelty for me. It wasn't something that really stuck around in a permanent way. I did a lot of video gaming when I was younger, and that was kind of the attraction and the thing that held me to it throughout the years in you know, high school and growing older. When it got time for me to figure out what I was going to do after high school, I was the person who had no idea what they were going to do, right? And this is very different and you know, from, you know, individuals like my wife, who is amazing and wonderful. She works in aerospace. And from the time she was young, she just had this idea, I want to be an astronaut. And that really framed a lot of how she thought about school and how she wanted to, you know, plan out college. And there's a very kind of clear path, or much clearer path, for folks that are in that type of industry. And she knew from very early on, I'm going to go to this type of high school. I'm going to study these things. I'm going to apply to this program at these colleges because they have the good, you know, aerospace degrees and programs and the connections to the different businesses and industry. And so she had a very defined path. Whereas me, when I was coming out of high school, I had no idea what I wanted to do. I was just trying to figure things out. I thought, yeah, maybe I'll go to college, maybe I'll not. And so there I was trying to figure things out. And comes time to apply for schools. And my sister, who had been, you know, off where she was somewhere around the world, I think she was working in Italy at the time. She comes back to come home to visit. And she's asking me, hey, Brett, where did you apply to school? You know, you're in your senior year of high school. Everyone should apply to college by now. And I'm like, hey, I was thinking I might not go to college. I think I'll just kind of apply to local jobs and figure it out. And she said, Brett, you're insane. You got to go to college. So we figured out. And at the time, it was so late in the application process. The only place that was still accepting applications was Cal State Long Beach, which is a great school. I had a good time there. And so she's like, hey, we got to get you applied at Cal State Long Beach. So I did. And she asked me, what do you want to major in? I said, I don't know. I think I need to make money once I graduate college. So I think I'm going to major in business. So I chose to go to Cal State Long Beach. And thankfully, they accepted me into their school of business. So I got a degree in business administration. So throughout that time of my life, and kind of not really having an idea of what I wanted to do, ended up studying business. At this point in my career, actually was a benefit, you know, in hindsight, that I went and had that opportunity and was able to explore and learn those things. But graduating college, wasn't, again, really sure what I wanted to do. Coming out with a business degree, it just so happened that there was a friend of a friend that needed some website work done. They said, hey, you know, we've got this website. We want to increase our sales. We want some web marketing stuff. somehow that came back to me and they said, hey, we know this guy, Brett. I think he, you know, does some computer stuff, or at least likes computer stuff. We think, you know, maybe he'd help you out. And so one thing led to another. And after I graduated college, I decided to start my own business in web marketing and web design. So that was the first real kind of introduction for me, aside from the hobbyist stuff, into, you know, more corporate inner side of, you know, official kind of, you know, IT information technology work. So I got involved with that, did that for a little bit, really didn't like it. It was me kind of catering to small businesses. The demands were really high. You know, the pay was relatively low per client. Did that for about a year or so. And I was like, hey, you know, I'm not really liking this. At the time, I was getting serious with my then girlfriend, who's now my wife. And we had moved in together. The rent checks were coming in. And I'm like, man, I need steady income. So being the kid who had grown up, you know, right down here in Southern California and in, you know, the beach cities here in Torrance, Manhattan Beach, the local town growing up, I mean, the local company, excuse me, growing up in town was Skechers. Their names were on the buildings and folks knew about it. And so I'm trying to figure out, well, what am I going to do? I don't want to keep doing this thing, running the business I have. And so a job opening came up at Skechers for a business analyst in the IT department. I thought, hey, you know, this might work. I came out of college with my business degree and I've been running my own little business here and you know, I've been doing some IT work. So I'm going to join up as a business analyst. So I applied for the job. I got accepted. And that was in 2012. So that was, where are we at? About 11, almost 12 years ago. So 12 years ago, I started my journey at Skechers as a business analyst in the IT department. So walking in the door, I had some experience, like I mentioned, you know, been working with websites and stuff and doing web design. But that was the first time that I'd really stepped into a enterprise environment. And at that time, going into that role, I really didn't have, you know, an understanding of what I needed to expect and what to expect going into it. But it was just, hey, I need the money. I need to pay rent. I need to find a, you know, a place that's going to give me that rent check. And, you know, I'm just going to apply myself and see what happens. So I did. And I walked in the door and, you know, I come to find out that role was basically the role where they wanted all of the work that everyone else in the IT department didn't want to do. They just decided we need to hire someone, some, you know, silly kid out of college to come in and take on all this administrative work and clean up all these messes. And so that's what I spent time doing when I first, you know, came on board. And it was a great learning opportunity, though. Great learning opportunity. Working in a role where I got to work with different business stakeholders, it really accelerated my understanding of learning different parts of business and the different roles and how they work with technology and the, you know, the interplay between those two, which, again, at the time, that's just me kind of, hey, I'll take on whatever I can take on and learn. But fast forward to now, and that type of understanding of technology and business really plays a big part in how I'm able to work in the role, you know, that I'm in today. So fast forward. So I'm giving you a lot of history there, but fast forward a bit. And throughout the years, I had the great opportunity to work on all kinds of different stuff. I was a Linux admin for a while. I worked on big storage arrays and block storage and SAN and NAS. I built out, you know, virtualization through VMware and got a chance to learn and get expertise in that. I managed backup and recovery for a while. None of this was really the super sexy stuff. It wasn't the things that everyone was kind of clamoring to do. You know, backup and recovery and DR and building DR plans and testing and multi-site replication. Like, it wasn't the thing that necessarily was at the top of everyone's, hey, we're vying for that role type of thing. But it was stuff that needed to be done. It was stuff that was new and interesting to me because I hadn't done it before. And it was just good opportunities to learn. And I just wanted to raise my hand and take on whatever it was that I could and you know, wherever I could help. So did a bunch of different roles. And eventually there came a need for help around information security stuff. So similar to some of the other areas, it was a place where stuff had been done. Maybe it wasn't, you know, the most formal managed practice, you know, technology was in place and firewalls and antivirus and stuff was working in places. But there came a need to do more. And so I had an opportunity to step into some of that work. And it was a good opportunity for me to get hands-on experience in a lot of different facets of information security. So it was endpoint detection and it was antivirus. And I got an opportunity to roll out, you know, one of the early commercial EDR solutions, which is really interesting. You got an opportunity to do incident response hands-on and, you know, dig into malware on endpoints and dig into command and control and look at, you know, attacks and exploits and pull down, you know, obfuscated JavaScript that, you know, people were running into and try and pull it apart and understand how does this thing work. And it's a really good opportunity to get a hands-on understanding of all those different facets of technology, of information security. And then came a time, you know, and over the years, the company has been growing and continued to grow and you know, continued to expand into different areas. And at a certain point in time, this is about, you know, 6 years ago, it came time for the organization to get a lot more serious about cybersecurity. You know, it had been, you know, a lot of organizations had followed a similar path where, you know, the ecosystem demanded it and ransomware and threat actors were becoming more prevalent, impacting more organizations, started to see privacy regulations, you know, pop up all over the world. So external pressures and regulatory pressures were increasing. It's like, hey, we need to get serious about this. And because I had been doing these things kind of in a hands-on practitioner's way, and I built a lot of things, you know, one day my boss came in and asked me, hey, you know, I've got a new job for you. There's a need that we have, and we need to really formalize and expand on what we're doing in the space. Brett, can you, you know, help build out a cybersecurity program? I said, sure, I could do that. That's the same answer I'd, you know, given every other time when they asked me, hey, Brett, can you work on this? Can you help with that? Can you, you know, develop some weird thing? Can you help build a report? Can you help, you know, this storage or virtualization thing or this network thing or whatever the case might be? I'm like, yeah, you know what? I'll do it. If it's something that needs to be done, if it's a need that the organization has, if there's a value to it, I'm interested in it. I want to help. So that's really been a primary motivation for me along the way. Certainly, you know, where can I help? How can I help? And just being open to all those opportunities that have come along. And then fast forward to today, 5 years into that process, have had the opportunity, the fortune to build out, you know, the security program that exists today and cover all the different facets of a modern comprehensive information security program. So, you know, governance, risk, and compliance, and application and cloud security, then detection and response, and threat and vulnerability management. IAM is an area that, you know, I've had a chance to start building out in a much more formal way as well. So a lot of good stuff and a lot of cool opportunities and experiences along the way.
So what I'm really hearing is that, hey, we've got your sister to thank for the fact that, you know, you are now a part of the security community and have built the program over there. And then really, though, you know, do you think you would have met your wife, too, if it weren't for your sister, you know, helping you do the college application?
Actually, I specifically would not have. So, yes, I've got my sister to thank for the college application and in a winding way for how I met my wife as well. While I was in college, I got involved with racquetball, which is not, I think, even really a sport anymore. At the time, it was kind of on the tail end of popularity. And that's actually how I met my wife, is we met on the racquetball courts. I used to play after school on Tuesdays and Thursdays at the local gym. And for whatever reason, the two of us happened to be at the same racquetball court at the same time. Was that 15, 16, whatever, however many years ago it was now. And yeah, that's kind of where it all started there as well.
Yeah, that is amazing, you know, and, you know, hey, I did want to interrupt you as you're going through your kind of personal journey and your career history here, and because, hey, I can tell already that this is probably going to be one of the easiest interviews ever here, you know, just to kind of let you go here. And I want to zoom in a little bit on some of the things that you said, is that when you first started out, you said you took, kind of, I think, a Linux administrator role, and then you were working on backup and disaster recovery and so on, which, of course, is security related. But, you know, in those early days, what did the program look like then versus, you know, you just now described a much more mature program, fast forward, you know, over a decade later, you know, how did it feel being in that spot? And, you know, were there any key, in retrospect, kind of turning points along the way where you knew that, this is where it might lead to?
I think a lot becomes more visible in retrospect, for sure. At the time, I had no sense of where anything was going to lead. I was just so in the weeds, applying myself in each of those different areas. For me, it was really an exercise in mastery in each of those different things that I, you know, was asked to do or became, you know, part of my responsibility. My objective, one of my objectives, aside from just wanting to do well and contribute, was really to master something. You know, if I was asked to do something, my objective was, hey, I want to do this thing, whatever it is, to the best degree that I can. I want to learn how to be really good at it. I want to understand it deeply. I don't want to just do it at a surface level. I've always carried that concept in my mind, you know, that if I'm going to be spending X amount of time in a role, in a job, at work, whatever it is I'm doing, even in life stuff, You know, we all have a finite amount of time in a given day, a given week. So whatever it is that is taking my time, I really want to apply myself and do that to the best degree I can, right? So early on, it was a lot of just trying to learn things, trying to master things. And yeah, in retrospect, back in recovery became super relevant with ransomware to how we think about and how we need to protect data and systems and to the overall picture of how we think about resilience for our organization. So having had that opportunity to do those things hands-on at the time, I wasn't primarily thinking about it from a security perspective. I was just thinking about it from that's the role I had at the time. But certainly in retrospect, it played a big part. And I had some good mentors along the way. You know, I had some folks, even though it wasn't always a situation where I was working as part of a large formal security organization, was surrounded by folks who were really intelligent, who understood cybersecurity, who had, you know, thought about it and made intentional choices about how things were done, who helped, you know, expose me to some of those concepts as well. So I did get some exposure early on. And then at a certain point, it was above and beyond the desire to learn and master. And it became about the challenge and the problem solving. And that's really one of the things earlier on that drew me into cybersecurity specifically, is it's so dynamic. It's adversarial. It's human on human challenge. It's always changing. It's always evolving. Technology is always changing and evolving, and it you know, seems to be year over year always at an increasing rate of velocity of that change. And cybersecurity has kind of been a layer on top of that, where you know it changes even faster and it's a little more dynamic. And so it's always something new. It's not just, hey, I've been in cybersecurity and I've done the same thing for 10 years. It's, you know, working in cybersecurity over a long period of time, you have to change and adapt and evolve because the environment is always changing and evolving. So certainly that's been, you know, a major part in kind of the interest and the joy and part of what I like about, you know, the work.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. You know, a lot of the things that you just said really resonate with me, going back to even, you know, not necessarily knowing what you wanted to do after graduation. Now, for me personally, you know, I think that you know, whether it was pressure from my parents or expectation, I always knew that I was going to go to college, but you know, the semester, the month before I was graduating from school, I had no idea what I wanted to do and realized that I should probably get some sort of job. And fortunately, I kind of fell into a technology role that eventually evolved into really security, similar to how you described. But also, another big thing that resonates with me is that you said that whatever role you were in, whatever job that you had, you really wanted to master it and wanted to understand it. Where do you think that came from? You know, how do you think that developed?
I think it's got to be partly just the way I'm wired. And that's something, and we talk about that specific thing when, you know, we have conversations around staffing and hiring and resourcing and what type of characteristics are we looking for and folks that we want to join, you know, the team and be part of what we're trying to do. That curiosity, the problem solving, those are things that, I think for me, it's partly just innate. It's partly who I am. I can attribute a lot of that to my father and our upbringing. He was always pushing us and exposing us to things. He had this philosophy that as a parent, his job and kind of his primary determinant of success was whether he could give all of his children the tools in their toolbox. He would call it the toolbox, which is the different skills and competencies that we develop throughout life. And so he thought part of his mission as a parent, his kind of core responsibility, was to make sure that by the time that we left and went out on our own, that he had done everything he could to give us all the tools in the toolbox, which, you know, wasn't about giving us the answers. It wasn't about giving us a specific resource or a specific connection. It was about instilling us with that type of, hey, I want to learn. I'm driven to be successful. I have the right tools to understand different things and interact with different folks. And I think he drove a lot of that in exposing us, like I said, to different things. And it was growing up, it was museums and it was road trips and it was learning about geology and just all kinds of different stuff. And that's something too, that now as a parent, and I've got, you know, four small kids, they're all elementary school. My oldest is 9. Got four small kids, and that type of thing has really stuck with me in my approach to how I think about being a parent and the types of skills and opportunities I want to give to them and how I want to approach that exposure with them. And also, as a manager and as a leader, a lot of those things have transferred over as well. I see a lot of parallels. Try and keep it within reason, because you don't want to cross those wires too much between, you know, being a dad or being a parent. and being a boss. But there's a lot of parallels with that same idea of kind of how you want to equip people and put them into positions to be successful and learn different things. So yeah, I think you know, some of it's got to be just innately who I am, and some of it's probably due to that upbringing as well.
Very cool. Yeah, for sure. In terms of that drive. And it's, you know, you mentioned interesting that you've got four kids. I've only got three kids. So you're definitely outnumbered there. So yeah, and how you do it. But all close to the same age there. And, you know, I definitely see that with the kids getting older in terms of, yeah, trying to impart some of those, hopefully, lifelong skills. You know, you talked about a key thing here in terms of, you know, hiring decisions and evaluating, you know, hey, is somebody going to be the right fit for the team? Do they have the characteristics that you might be looking for? And, you know, there's that saying that, hey, you know, don't as a manager, as a leader, don't waste your time trying to motivate people. You want to hire people that are already motivated. And then if you do, right, then you can spend your time getting the roadblocks, the little bumps in the road out of the way. And, you know, that's when I first heard that years ago, that's really resonated with me because I've made some great hires over the years, but some not so good hires. And one of the key elements in retrospect was that, you know, I probably incorrectly identified some of those key traits that you're talking about here in terms of that that desire. So yeah, definitely an important characteristic. You know, you also mentioned kind of as the program has evolved, a number of key areas, getting to work early on in kind of EDR space. And you mentioned application security and IAM and the cloud. So I want to touch on a couple of those there in terms of kind of AppSec. Yeah. And you know, going from backup, making sure the infrastructure is in place and making sure that the endpoints are protected. But of course, as a retail business, you know, your customer touch point is one of the most important. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, how your AppSec program and capabilities have changed and grown over the years?
Sure, absolutely. And this is an area where I think that I personally have benefited because I was able to do so many different things where I never thought of myself. I never grew that mentality of I was a thing. So I was never a network engineer or a security person or an infrastructure engineer or a developer, even though I did some development throughout that time as well. Taking that kind of mix of different experiences, that agnostic approach, being able to really try and put myself in the seat of, hey, what are we trying to accomplish? What is the business trying to accomplish? How are they trying to use technology to support that outcome or that objective? And then how are the folks in IT or technology development, how are they thinking about trying to solve some of those challenges and problems? So when it came time to really focus on the overall, you know, SDLC and secure software development lifecycle conversation and look at, you know, how do we figure out where do we need to be in terms of controls and maturity of our operations? Where are we today? How do we get there? Thinking about how we augment some of those existing teams and tools and technology, it was, you know, a process of starting with understanding first and then applying the expertise from those different disciplines as a whole. So like a lot of organizations, you know, who have gone through a digital transformation, starting with, hey, we're in traditional infrastructure with traditional networks and some, you know, waterfall or whatever maybe your development methodologies might be, going through a transformation to we're an organization that wants to use public cloud, we want to use infrastructure as a service, we're looking for velocity, we're looking for, you know, consolidation of skill sets and kind of that turn the key and get the outcome type of result. And we went through that process and had to build. I'm sorry, Frank, we're going to jump in there for a second.
No, keep on going.
So going through that digital transformation, one of the things that we had to do, and when we looked at software development, looked at cloud, the folks that we saw really wanting to leverage cloud infrastructure and leverage concepts like, you know, auto scaling and things of that nature, it was development teams driving the need for the infrastructure. Whereas in a lot of the more traditional use cases, it wasn't always the development teams driving it. It might be some other IT team. It might be an operational team. It could be a business unit directly saying, hey, we need infrastructure. You know, we need a file server or whatever type of thing they needed. When it came to cloud infrastructure, when it came to that piece of it, it seemed to really be the development teams driving the need. So when it came time for us to think about, hey, how do we want to augment those technology teams? How do we need to build a security practice that really fits in line with how those technology teams are trying to operate? It became really apparent to us that there was going to be a lot of synergy from taking those practices around application security and taking this emerging space for, you know, us at the time around cloud security and trying to bring the two together, kind of in the same way that development and operations merged into that concept of DevOps over time. We really wanted to take these adjacent areas of work and expertise and find ways to gain synergies. And it turned out really well for us for a lot of different reasons, not just because of the underlying drivers of the teams that wanted to use the environment, but also the environments themselves. A cloud environment and an infrastructure as a service environment, for the ones certainly that we've had experience with, tend to be a lot more like applications than traditional infrastructure. The way that they interact with them, the way that you build around them, the way that they expose certain pieces of the infrastructure and some of the things that we need from a security perspective, some of the things that we need to be concerned about from a security perspective, like, you know, authentication tokens and APIs and web requests and things like that. The infrastructure acts a lot more like applications than traditional networks and servers and storage. And so we have found a lot of synergy in that approach. And that's kind of how we've thought about things and how we've tried to apply those security concepts to those environments and use cases.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Earlier, you mentioned needing to, security is so interesting because you need to stay ahead of the attackers. But in this case, what you just described is also being able to stay in front of the business and your internal customers and your stakeholders in terms of where they actually wanted to go. And especially in the early days, how did you get your team, the security team, up to speed in cloud and cloud security?
Oh man, I think we're still trying to get up to speed. I think that's a never ending journey, particularly and as you know, pointed out, trying to keep pace with adversaries, trying to keep pace with, you know, your business. And if you're in an organization that's trying to move fast, if you're an organization that's trying to innovate, if you're an organization that's growing, there's going to be a lot of inherent velocity there anyway. So it is a challenge getting up to speed, staying up to speed. We've done a lot of different things. Certainly from a personnel perspective, trying to find folks, going back to that conversation around, you know, some of the capabilities versus specific, you know, knowledge and experience, knowing that areas like cloud were going to be very dynamic and changing over time. We didn't focus as much on, hey, do you have this specific experience with this specific cloud provider doing this specific thing? We really tried to look for the folks that had the right background, the right base that we could put into those situations, give them training, give them support, give them, you know, really invest in them and you know, try and match some of that velocity we're seeing in other places. Partnership is really important to matching velocity. If you are always at the end of a conversation, then you're always going to be in a position where you're at a deficit and trying to catch up. The earlier you can get involved in different conversations and when things are evolving and changing and when business units are ideating, especially when it comes to things where velocity is very accessible, like in public cloud infrastructure, building those partnerships, having the emphasis on how can we help, how can we figure out a way to accelerate what you're trying to do as opposed to stop what you're trying to do. It's a fine balance for sure. You don't want to let everything go out the door. Certainly, if we just stand back and watch things happen, we're not doing a very good job of helping to protect the organization. But yeah, finding the right folks, training them, investing in them, finding folks who have the right mentality, who you can align with, say, hey, this is how we want to do it. We want to take that partnership approach. We want to get in early. Building some of those frameworks to publish some of our guidelines and standards and make sure that we're being communicative and proactive and saying, hey, these are the things that we expect. So when different parts of the organization are going out and looking at vendors or partners or thinking about building new designs, we've already been proactive in communicating. These are some of the things you need to be thinking about. This is how we want you to interact with us. This is where we can help. So it's not one thing. And you know, if I had the magic wand, I would wave it for myself and plenty of others as well. So I don't think it is a magic wand thing, but certainly, like I mentioned, the people, the training, the partnership, the communication, the collaboration, those are some of the really key elements to helping match the velocity of those changing environments and needs.
Great. So what about for your, whether it be for your program overall or specifically in cloud security, what would you say are your top three priorities?
Top three priorities in cloud. So, well, I'll address both of those. So for the program as a whole, for the cloud as a whole, I have this concept that we cannot help protect what we cannot see. So the priority is always around visibility. And like I just mentioned, from a business perspective, from a project and architecture perspective, there's a lot of those different elements we use to get visibility early into some of those things. From a technical perspective, visibility is always important. So as environments change, as we bring on new technologies, we're always trying to think, how do we get understanding into what the environment is in at any given point in time? How do we get the right events and alerts and telemetry coming out of those environments? Because if we can't see it, we've got no chance of doing anything else that we need to do to help protect it. So visibility is always a priority. Velocity is definitely a priority in when it comes to cloud. How do we make sure that we remain, you know, agile and we know things are going to adapt and change? So that's a priority for us. And then maturity and being proactive. I take those two kind of as hand in hand. So as we develop our own capabilities, having that methodology to say, hey, we've just partnered and come up with something good. Whether that thing good was we came up with a new design, we came up with a secure pattern we can apply to multiple different workloads, we came up with a new workflow or a new policy or new process that we agree is good. We always want to take those and think about it from a maturity perspective. How do we take that thing that we did really well in one instance and make it repeatable, make it something that's proactive, and continue to push things in that direction? Because the more we can kind of push, you know, further left, if you're talking about your DevOps shift left concept, or federate out into the organization or put into the hands of different stakeholders, the more we can empower others to do things well, then the better we can meet that velocity, the better we can meet that coverage, the better visibility and consistency we can have. And I think that it's something that really empowers us to be successful in a lot of different ways.
You really just described kind of the key characteristic of a modern security program in terms of it's not just central command and control. It's not just what the security team says you have to do, but pushing out that responsibility, as you said, so that they're enabled to actually get work done on their own, in their own workflow, on their own timelines. And, you know, kind of related to that, are there any types of tools or techniques that you found to be the most helpful, whether it be a cloud native solution by one of the cloud service providers or whether it be a third party, you know, in terms of kind of the categories of tools that are extremely helpful for you building a modern security program?
Yeah, tons. And the cloud's a very interesting place when you talk about tooling as well, because that environment, because of the standardization, because it's something that behaves in a repeatable pattern, it's deterministic, it's well documented. There's a lot of really good first-party services, there's a lot of really good third-party tools and service providers. You can get a lot of help in a lot of different places. You said a word a second ago, which is enablement. That's something that's really important to how we approach a lot of these problems and how we do things like, you know, empower different stakeholders to carry forward some of those good security practices. When it comes to things like risk and identity and access management and cloud security posture management, really, we try and think about it from perspective of what do we need to put in place, one, again, to meet our visibility requirements so we have an understanding of what's going on, and also, how do we put something in place that's going to be able to be transferable to different stakeholders? If we're going to put a technology in place that gives us visibility, we're going to want to be thinking about how do we take that visibility, how do we contextualize it, how do we put it in the hands of other stakeholders, how do we put that visibility into the hands of the cloud engineers who are building the infrastructure or the developers who are developing infrastructure as code. So we've gotten some really good technologies that augment our environment. We look for things, again, that provide us that context, that visibility, the time to action, stuff that is valuable to multiple different stakeholders. And so we've had some good success. The IAM space is one we've had really good success in augmenting our environment. That's really important to cloud security. You know, I'm sure it's on a SANS framework somewhere where you talk about IAM in the cloud, and if you spend any time there, you understand the proliferation of roles and responsibilities and accounts and attributes. So we have taken an approach because when we started working early on in cloud, we didn't know exactly where things were going to go. I could say candidly today, I don't know, you know, talking multiple years out, I can say with great confidence exactly where everything's going to go. So knowing that we were going to be dealing with uncertainty, seeing the pull that other organizations had gone through where as soon as you get one, you know, cloud service provider, then it's another. And before you know it, you've got six different, you know, IaaS providers and you got workloads running all over the place. We really wanted to take a service provider agnostic approach to building out our process, our capability, our tooling, because we wanted to remain adaptable. We didn't want to just get expertise in one specific, you know, cloud provider and just say, hey, you know, we have tools and capabilities that work in this native environment, but tomorrow when we want to go use a new cloud provider, we're going to have to start again from scratch. So that's been kind of core to our philosophy for how we deal with that multi-cloud challenge is, hey, you know, we're going to always look at what are they providing natively. We're going to do that cost benefit analysis. But a big piece of our thought process is around how much of this is transferable into other environments. So we've taken a model. We've had a lot of success with those third party technologies, augmenting multiple different cloud environments and giving the folks on our team a consistent visibility, a consistent intake. a kind of single approach to look at that diversity of different environments. So it kind of serves as an abstraction layer for us. It makes things a little simpler. It makes things easier. It means when we're looking at things like a framework or a compliance assessment, we want to understand, hey, what's our public exposure look like, which is always a challenge in those highly dynamic, you know, public cloud environments. We don't have to find ourselves looking in each individual place. We can just kind of look across the ecosystem as a whole.
You know, the way that you described it, it seems like, you know, it would be, make a lot of sense to senior leadership, other parts of the organization, what benefit security is bringing. But when you brief senior leadership, when you talk about the board, when you give the talk to the board, when you give an update about the program overall, what has worked and what hasn't? What have been some kind of highlights and what have been perhaps some lowlights or lessons learned along the way in terms of conveying what the program is doing to senior leadership?
Oh, man, I think we need a whole other podcast for the lowlights. Which you know, I'm joking to a degree, but it's always an evolving process. It's always, you're always learning lessons. You're always trying to figure out, you know, what's working. And again, those things don't stay consistent over a given period of time. So when thinking about communicating to senior leadership, whether that's senior technology leadership or senior business leadership or going up above and beyond to the board, whoever it is you're thinking about communicating to, I kind of start in the same place, which is I try and think about, what is the role that person has? What is their breadth of visibility? What is their breadth of responsibility? What's important to them? How are they going to understand and interpret the things I'm talking about? Because you know, as you well know, and as I'm sure all the listeners you know as well, information security, cybersecurity is complicated. It gets really deep. It gets the deepest. It gets deep. It gets technical. It gets complex. It gets into jargon. It gets into crazy math that I don't even understand. And I just, you know, respect and appreciate the smart people that we have that do understand it. So it gets very complex. And especially when you look at these different elements across a diverse organization, distilling that into something that's meaningful is a challenge. I wouldn't even say it can be a challenge. I would just say across the board, I have not met or spoken to anyone that didn't look at that as a challenge. Even folks that had a really good practice there, even folks that are really good at it, it is a challenge because communicating complex concepts is hard. So thinking about what are those different stakeholders, you know, care about, how do we take that information and articulate, you know, what we're about, which is risk, about cyber risk, and where is the risk? How do we take some of those technical aspects and think about it from aligning those to business risks? If we can take those underlying technical risks and say, well, how do they translate into business risk? Now we're talking about business risk. Now that becomes a broader conversation and we can kind of align some of those things that, hey, we're not going to go and dive into a specific vulnerability or a specific exploit. You know, we might reference things like frameworks. And for me, I try to keep things pretty high level. Certainly, it's always backed. It's like the iceberg type of principle. It's backed by all the research and the data and the metrics and the details. We can always go as deep as we want to go. But I like to start with just the tip and then go from there and draw from there and figure out what works for individuals. And I like to evolve those things over time. It's certainly a balance because you don't always want to be changing your formats and your communications and the frameworks and standards you're using. But you also want to be flexible and figure out what's working, what's resonating, where are the questions coming from, you know, and kind of drive into where folks want to be and where the conversation's going.
Yeah. Now, related to those kind of broader conversations, you know, I also want to mention here that you're on the board of the Retail and Hospitality ISAC. And for those, the listeners that, who might not be familiar, can you tell us a little bit about kind of what the ISACs are and specifically what's the focus of the one that that you're on and kind of what's your responsibilities and how did that all come about?
Sure, absolutely. I love the RH ISAC. It's an organization that really has meant a lot to what we have done and what we've built and how we've continued to build. I think it's a fantastic model. The concept of protect as one and bringing information together. The organizations really started years ago, laser focused on threat intelligence. How do we solve this problem that the adversaries are sharing their knowledge and expertise, but different businesses are operating in silos? And so we might put ourselves at a disadvantage because adversaries are going to go and exploit, you know, each of us one at a time. We might be seeing the same attacks, the same, you know, infrastructure backing those environments, the same command and control, the same IOCs. But if we're not able to share that information across similarly impacted organizations, we're putting ourselves at a big disadvantage. So that's really where the ISACs and the information sharing started. And the organization for RH ISAC, we actually got involved when it was RSISC, before they joined with the hospitality ISAC, and they merged, I think it was in, I want to say 2019, maybe 2020, when the two of those organizations merged and became RHISAC, so supporting retail and hospitality sectors. And it's been an amazing forum for collaboration. It's an amazing forum for intelligence sharing. The structure of those really suits the different things that organizations are trying to do. So yes, you're going to see, you know, organizations sharing, you know, individual IOCs. Here's an IP address. Here's an email header. Here's a, you know, bad domain. You're going to see expansions of that and sharing TTPs and all the tactics associated with those things. You're going to have different working groups focused on different parts of an organization. So you can sit down and share and collaborate with folks working on IAM in another retail organization. You can sit down and talk about detection and response or risk management and really kind of collaborate on some of the best practices and intel sharing. And as you know, we have grown and matured our program, the value that we've gotten has remained high throughout, but the way that we've gotten it has certainly evolved. Where early on it was a lot of, hey, looking at a big picture, how do we want to think about, you know, building a program? How do we want to think about the different areas we need? What are we seeing other folks in our industry doing? How are they thinking about some of the big picture problems? And then as that evolved, it really became more of that, how do we service those different areas of our program? How do we get that collaboration at a deeper level, a more direct level? It's an area that we're super involved with. And when the opportunity came up, when there was an opening for the board of directors, I had been collaborating in a bunch of different ways. And it was just something to me where I felt the organization had been such a benefit to what we were trying to do. And I really believed in that mission of, from a cybersecurity perspective, that we would all be better off and continue to be, you know, better off if we work together, just like the adversaries are working together against us. So it was that type of benefit. It was that type of mission that really drew me to participate. And eventually, the opportunity came up and I was elected to the board of directors, which has also been an amazing opportunity. And it just continues to allow me to collaborate, participate, and help support those other organizations and participate in some of the vision of how the group operates. So yeah, it's been an amazing journey all around.
Very cool. So that was an actual election, huh? So you had to drum up enough votes to get elected?
So I had to drum up the votes.
Yeah. Which, you had to buy some beers then, it sounds like.
Yeah. It wasn't as much buying of the beers. I'm not that much of a politician. But luckily, because I'd been out there, I think, you know, and just with that genuine interest to be involved and help, I think other folks had kind of picked up on that. So it was an election, and that's how I got there.
Awesome. Well, hey, congratulations. And so, hey, now we'll, since we're getting to the end here, I want to switch gears a little bit and do a little bit of a reverse around and give you an opportunity to ask a question of your choice if you would like.
Yeah, I'd love to. So I think what I want to ask you about, and having the career that you've had, and anyone who spends a long enough time in the industry, There's ups and downs, and we do different things, and I know you've done a number of different things in the teaching and work you've done in different organizations. What I wanted to ask you, Frank, is going through those ups and downs, going through the different turns in your career, where do you get your energy from? You've got amazing energy. You've got amazing enthusiasm. I know you've got that passion. It comes across all the time. How do you refill your tank? You know, what gives you that inspiration and that drive to continue going on?
Man, that's a good question, and I'm just pausing here because, you know, you didn't tell me the question ahead of time, right? So it's kind of taking it on the fly here. And, you know, I wasn't kidding around earlier when you were talking about kind of that kind of desire to master a topic, desire to understand something deeply. And it took me probably many years to realize it. You know, I didn't know what career I would go into, what field I would go into. I never had any thought, you know, I never thought, hey, I want to be, an astronaut, or I want to be a lawyer or a doctor or what have you, whatever my parents would have tried to prescribe when I was younger. And I was always interested in learning new things. And if that's kind of one thread that ties back to, even when I was a kid, right, collecting toys and comic books and sports cards and so on, I was a kid that would read that those price guides for baseball cards and comic books cover to cover, just because I would want to, learn as much as I could about the different comics and the different stories that I was interested in. And, you know, even the prices and how they change over time, actually, you know, I don't know how if it gets any nerdier than that. And so whatever geeky niche it was in, I always just wanted to learn more. And I found that I was happiest when learning. And so that was certainly, like you mentioned, a desire. One of the things in retrospect of why it was beneficial to go into cybersecurity, because it's a never ending journey. And you know, I thought early in my career, I'd never go into a leadership or a management position. But, you know, the type of learning that you do there in that type of role was a different, right? That I hadn't experienced as a hands-on practitioner, as an engineer. And then, you know, having been fortunate enough to be able to teach for SANS now for many, many years, you know, and, you know, people say this all the time. It's like, hey, if you want to learn something more deeply, then you try to teach others about it as well. So every time that I step into a classroom or teach the class, it's not just about me conveying the information. I'm learning something through that experience, through that class, through all of the attendees at some point along the way as well. And I've always just, you know, that you asked about the enthusiasm. I've always just been the most interested and excited about learning something and experiencing something different. And I think that's what it is. And, you know, whenever there's a little bit of downtime, I mean, I've had situations where people would say, Frank, well, I want your job. Right. And I'd say, great. Well, let's talk about it. Let's figure out, right, hey, how, you know, you could potentially get there. Because I know in the back of my mind that if I'm doing the exact same job, and, you know, you've had, even though it's been at the same company, many careers, right, in your time there, if I was in the same job for 3, 5, 10 years, the exact same job I'm saying here, right, I know that for me, I'm probably not doing something right. So for me, I think that joy, that enthusiasm really just comes from learning and experiencing something new, whether that's even trying a new dish or, right, tasting a new spirit or tasting a new cocktail, whatever it might be, right, for that experience. So yeah, that's the fun part of it, Brett. So yeah, that's a very good question.
Kindred spirits for sure. It just popped into my head. My dad had this bronze plaque that he sat over his desk for many years, and I apologize if I'm going to get this one wrong. I think it said ancora imparo, which I believe is Italian and translates into still learning. And it was just that concept of always learning. So definitely a kindred spirits in that regard.
Amazing. Well, hey, Brett, that brings us to the end of the show here. Look forward to getting together in person again sometime soon and raising another glass. But thank you so much for joining. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me, Frank.